It is Thursday, December 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, at least 50 people die in a Taliban attack on a key airport in Afghanistan.
That's another example that the Taliban, or at least elements of the Taliban, still remain committed to acts of terrorism.
On International Human Rights Day, we look at a UN committee's call for China to end abuses. And a new television movie explores a tragedy in country singer Dolly Parton's childhood. It's all ahead. In a battle that ended early Thursday, the death toll has risen to at least 50 following an attack that began more than 24 hours earlier by the Taliban against the heavily fortified Kandahar airport. Among the casualties were 38 civilians, 10 Afghan soldiers, and 2 policemen. The Defense Ministry says all 11 Taliban attackers were killed. The raid coincided with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's participation in trilateral talks in Islamabad with officials from host Pakistan and India, aimed at promoting regional ties and jump-starting the stalled Afghan peace process. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby acknowledged Wednesday efforts aimed at reconciliation have not yet paid off.
We all recognize that there's still a long way to go here. There has been great progress. President Ghani has put in place important reforms, has tried to administer a government that is inclusive and responsive and representative. And the Afghan National Security Forces have also come a long way to this goal of being able to defend their citizens and their own territory, their sovereignty. But we all recognize that Taliban remains a threat. You probably saw reports about attacks on Kandahar. That's another example that the Taliban, or at least elements of the Taliban, still remain committed to acts of terrorism. So we all recognize Afghanistan is still a dangerous place in some regards, which I think underscores, again, the importance of these discussions in Pakistan.
A first round of peace talks with the Taliban took place in July, but were suspended upon news of the death of Taliban leader Mullah Omar, sparking a power struggle within the group. Meanwhile, on the sidelines of the Heart of Asia summit, India and Pakistan announced a resumption of a high-level bilateral dialogue. The announcement follows a change in policy within the administration of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Kanti Prasad Bajpayee, South Asia analyst at the National University of Singapore, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the objectives of the dialogue.
It focused on security issues, terrorism, as well as Kashmir. It's had its ups and downs, especially after the 2008 Mumbai attack, but essentially the Indian government has stuck with it. The Modi government, though, did choose to call off the talks after the Pakistani ambassador in Delhi chose to meet with some Kashmiri separatists. But the Indian Prime Minister has been indicating that he would like to resume talks. And when he met Nawaz Sharif in Paris at the climate change talks, there was an indication that the talks would resume.
Why the change of heart in New Delhi?
Well, he's been looking for a way, I think, to get back to discussions with Pakistan. He wanted action on those who were accused in the Mumbai blast. He wanted Pakistan to take action on them quicker. And Nawaz Sharif has now indicated that the Pakistani government will act faster. So I think that's one factor. I think a second was a growing feeling in the international community that India should try and resume the talks. Thirdly, of course, the perennial problem of trying to ensure that whoever's in power in Pakistan is seen to be in a working relationship with India so that, you know, more extremist elements in Pakistan don't outflank him. And so I think India has been quite concerned to appear to be dealing with a civilian prime minister who wants to do business with India and not to undermine his position within Pakistan. So, and those are all very good reasons. The long-term reason, of course, is that there are nuclear weapons in both countries and two adversaries must simply continue to talk.
Is Kashmir the main issue?
Kashmir is certainly one of them, certainly for Pakistan. On the Indian side, I think terrorism and security along the line of control in Kashmir is an issue. There have been a number of artillery exchanges, India claims, initiated by Pakistan recently. And so, you know, India would like to have that on the table. And I think this is what they've agreed to now.
Well, as for Afghanistan, Bajpai says the prospects of an agreement on peace between Kabul and the Taliban have improved somewhat, as both sides recognize neither can achieve an outright military victory. For reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition Susan Yaki. Susan?
Hi, Sarah. Hi, everyone. One thing that is trending big today is Human Rights Day. The Independent headline reads, "Promoting human rights is not about who can shout the loudest." It writes, "Our British democratic values have developed over time with human rights at their core. We are reminded of this fact this year as we mark the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta. Human Rights Day, chosen by the UN General Assembly to mark the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, is a day when Britain, a key promoter of such rights and values, can hold its head high. This government was elected on a manifesto commitment to protect human rights. Also, respect for human rights must be central in response to security challenges, says OSCE ODIHR. OSCE participating states must make sure that human rights are an integral and central part of their responses to the profound security challenges they are facing today. Michael George Link, director of the OSCE Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights, said a human rights-centered approach is the best insurance for long-term security. Without human rights protection as a cornerstone, efforts to address challenges such as terrorist threats, the ever-mounting numbers of refugees seeking shelter from war or persecution, the crisis in and around Ukraine, and many more are unlikely to achieve their aims. Lottie Like tweets, "Let's shame abusive governments, leaders, and groups, demand justice for victims, and honor courageous activists." Young Scott says, "We're saying no to hate speech on this Human Rights Day." And you can join in the conversation by going to hashtag Human Rights Day. Sarah?
Thanks very much, Susan. That's International Edition's Susan Yaki, and we'll hear a bit more about Human Rights Day later in the program. In other news, presidential candidate Donald Trump has sparked a fierce backlash across the globe for suggesting the U.S. bar Muslims from entering the country. But the frontrunner for the Republican nomination has also raised a question, is it constitutional to bar Muslims from the country? VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas has more.
The U.S. banned Chinese immigrants in the late 1800s and put Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II. So is Donald Trump's call for Muslims to be barred from entering the U.S. unconstitutional?
I think it's a political non-starter, it's a constitutional non-starter, and it's just a bad, bad idea.
Georgetown law professor David Cole says a president would first have to get Congress to enact a law authorizing the exclusion of all Muslims. And even if he or she did, the ban would still be unconstitutional.
The Establishment Clause in the First Amendment prohibits the government from favoring or disfavoring any specific religion.
The White House lashed back, saying Trump's stance disqualifies him from being president.
If your first act as president is to put your hand on the Bible and swear an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, the kind of policy, if I could call it that, that Mr. Trump is advocating is entirely inconsistent with the values that are enshrined in our Constitution.
But constitutional scholars disagree on whether the U.S. government can prevent Muslims from entering. Some say the government has broad authority over immigration and can make distinctions based on nationality, as it did in the Chinese Exclusion Act in the late 1800s, in part because foreign citizens abroad are not accorded U.S. constitutional protections. But Cole argues cases like the internment of Japanese Americans would not hold up today.
While the decision at the time upholding the internment has never been overruled, the only reason it hasn't been overruled is government has never tried to do it again.
Yale law professor Akhil Amar said via Skype a move to bar all Muslims defies the nation's values.
American religious pluralism has been a light unto the world, a model for the world, and that's what Donald Trump doesn't understand. In a very, very deep way, his proposals are, in a word, un-American.
But Trump continues to lead in the polls for the Republican presidential nomination, even as he is roundly criticized at home and around the world. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, the White House.
We're not winning anymore, folks. We're going to have to start winning.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study conducted by an international collaboration of scientists predicts the percentage of global carbon dioxide emissions may actually dip slightly in 2015 compared to 2014 levels. According to the report, China emitted 27% of the world's carbon dioxide in 2014. The U.S. had a 15.5% CO2 emission rate, followed by the European Union with 9.5% and India with about 7%. The researchers say that decreased coal use in China was largely responsible for the decline in global CO2 emissions, and that continued slow growth of annual CO2 output will depend on the use of coal in China and in other countries. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new TV movie looks at singer Dolly Parton's childhood. Well, today is Human Rights Day, International Human Rights Day. I'm joined now by the China Director for Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson. Sophie, a UN committee has just issued a report on China's human rights status. Basically, what is found in that report?
Well, the UN's Committee Against Torture has issued a pretty scathing indictment of China's record on that subject in particular, and it makes some very strong recommendations about eradicating torture by, first of all, minimizing the amount of time somebody can be held before they're brought before a judge so that they aren't held by the police for more than a month at a time. It also urges that they have access to a lawyer from the moment they're deprived of liberty. It calls for an end to the use of restraints, solitary confinement, investigations about abuses of North Koreans or canon and survivors. It's a very thoroughgoing and historical document. And if the Chinese government was serious about eradicating torture, it would follow that roadmap.
It seems as though human rights lawyers, at least within the last, you know, it means for a while, but certainly within this past year, the past few months, have been singled out for special treatment by Chinese authorities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was a remarkable, really unprecedented roundup of human rights lawyers across China between July and September, and more than 20 of those people are still detained and or disappeared. And it doesn't seem to be enough for the authorities to prevent these people from doing their work and taking cases to court. They've also really stepped up public rhetoric, demonizing the very idea of using courts as a way of protecting human rights. And I think that's a pretty alarming regression from where we were about a decade ago.
A prominent human rights lawyer, Pu Zhicheng, is apparently will be tried next week. He has been detained, I believe, for quite a while, but he is also one of China's most prominent human rights lawyers.
Yeah, he is really the canary in the coal mine, I think, for this community these days. He's a very well-known, very well-regarded lawyer who has worked on some very high-profile cases on issues ranging from religious freedom to labor rights. He has been detained for about a year and a half now, which is, of course, wildly beyond what law and procedure should allow. And he is scheduled to be tried on Monday, largely on the basis of some online postings, all of which were entirely within the confines of peaceful expression as guaranteed by Chinese and international law. And we're really encouraging global attention to the outcome of this case, because I think if he is found guilty, then really nobody is safe anymore in this realm of activism.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's Sophie Richardson. She is China Director at Human Rights Watch. The gunman accused of killing three people and wounding nine others last month at a Planned Parenthood clinic in the western U.S. state of Colorado shouted out in court that he's guilty of the crime. During Wednesday's outburst, 57-year-old Robert Lewis Deere also called himself a warrior for babies. His public defender told the judge Deere is not mentally competent to stand trial. Deere is accused of gunning down the victims inside a Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood clinic that provides abortions. He could face the death penalty if convicted. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
This is International Edition. Well, as the holidays approach here in the United States, many inspiring stories of faith and family come to life on the small screen. One of those TV movies includes the story of one of country music's icons, Dolly Parton. Her new film, Coat of Many Colors, is a snapshot of her life as a nine-year-old girl overcoming a family tragedy while living in poverty in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee in 1955. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here with more details. Well, Nikki, this movie, Coat of Many Colors, is actually based on Dolly Parton's signature hit of the same name.
Yes, and Dolly Parton says that the song is one of her, actually her favorite song that she has ever written. It was released in October 1970. From the album of the same name. And the song itself tells a story of how her mom stitched together a coat for Dolly made out of rags that were given to her family. And as she sewed the coat, her mom would share the biblical story of Joseph and his coat of many colors, in which his father Jacob or Israel gave Joseph this fancy coat as a gift because Joseph was his favorite son. And Joseph, like Dolly, is also one out of 12 children. However, when Dolly wore this coat to school, she was ridiculed and teased about it. But by the end of the song, she realizes that despite being poor, according to the world standards, that coat was far richer than all the material gain in the world. Now, in the movie, we get a deeper meaning behind the song. Dolly has never been ashamed of where she's come from. Her dad and her mom married as teenagers. They were dirt poor. Her dad never had a chance to go to school, but he was a hard worker. And she says her mom had a faith that would move mountains and a love for her dad that just would not quit. And Dolly says that her mother would give each of her siblings a baby. You know, this is your baby, meaning you'll take care of him, you'll feed him, you'll change the diapers. Well, the baby that was supposed to be Dolly's dies. Aww. And her mother goes into a deep depression. And then during this time is when she makes the coat for Dolly. And so the coat then becomes symbolic of stitching the pieces of life back together after this loss. And once Dolly starts getting teased for wearing it, it also becomes a means of personal transformation as little Dolly learns to determine her own self-worth versus anchoring her worth in the shallow opinions of others. So the coat really becomes an anchor in the film, signifying resiliency, renewal, faith, and most importantly, love.
So tell us about the cast. Dolly Parton handpicked many of the actors.
Yeah, Dolly picked Ricky Schroeder to play her father. She said he reminded her so much of her father. She said he looks like his people, his body structure. And Ricky Schroeder and his wife actually lost a child too. So doing the film really hit home for his family as well. Country music star Jennifer Nettles plays her mom. I was surprised by this too. Dolly says Jennifer sent her an audition tape and she flipped out. She said when she heard Jennifer reading the role, she thought, oh my Lord, that's Mama. And she said that people are going to be blown away by Jennifer's performance. Olivia Lynn plays Dolly as a child, and she was chosen out of hundreds of children. And Dolly's sister is in it too. She plays the church lady who brings the rags to make the coat.
This film is also the first in a series Dolly Parton is doing with NBC.
Yeah, it is. Coat of Many Colors is the first in a series of movies Dolly is making. Jolene, based on her 1974 hit, will be the next film.
I love that song.
Oh my God, very different story. That's going to be juicy. I can't wait. Coat of Many Colors airs December 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern on NBC, and you can actually take a look at a lengthy preview of it on our Facebook page. You can just go to VOA Music and you can get a sneak peek there.
You can hear music from Dolly Parton and many other country music artists on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter at @VOA_music or on Facebook at VOA Music. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love, she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story.
That is singer Dolly Parton singing her song, Coat of Many Colors. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On December 10, 1948, still stunned by the horrendous crimes committed against civilian populations during the Second World War, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. At the time, one of the Declaration's chief architects, former First Lady and member of the United States delegation to the United Nations, Eleanor Roosevelt, wrote, "We have found that the conditions of our contemporary world require the enumeration of certain protections which the individual must have if he is to acquire a sense of security and dignity in his own person." Since 1950, the United Nations has celebrated December 10th as Human Rights Day. This day is best known for the Nobel Peace Prize award ceremony in Oslo, Norway. However, cultural events and exhibitions focused on various human rights themes take place around the world. This year's Human Rights Day marks the launch of a year-long campaign to highlight and preview the 50th anniversary of two important human rights documents, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. Both documents were adopted by the UN General Assembly on December 16, 1966. Despite the tireless efforts and notable successes of numerous national and international agencies, non-governmental organizations, and activists all over the world, there is still much to be done. On this Human Rights Day, let us resolve to work together as a community of like-minded nations to put an end to these abuses and to hold those responsible for inflicting them to account. Ultimately, our goal is to transform our observation of December 10th as a day not about highlighting human rights abuses across the globe, but rather about commemorating the realization of full and unobstructed human rights for all people everywhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.